All right, this week we're going to have our next in the morning Midrash series, and the topic today is Lot's wife and the destruction of Sodom. So the Lot's wife is really more of the draw, because it's such a fascinating. If you ever drove, I don't remember which road it is in Israel, but there's a place in Israel where you're driving down like into the canyon, and there's a pillar of something, and somebody put a sign there that says Lot's wife. Okay, you know what I have to say about that? Yeah, right. Okay, really? No, but it's certainly a good tourist spot. Right? Oh, look what we found.
Is that in the Negev?
I don't remember where it is. Yeah, something like that. So there's a Lot's wife sign. Now there was an awful movie made a number of years ago starring John Voight, who I generally like, but it was a terrible movie called Noah. Okay, Noah. And in this movie, they depict the flood. But before depicting the flood, they make this ridiculous suggestion that Noah and his wife lived in Sodom. And when the call came and said God's going to destroy Sodom, they left. And then and one of his best friends was Lot. Okay, Lot, right? Lot. And who I forget is played by... And Noah and his family, and his wife leave much earlier, and then Lot and his wife leave, and as the fireballs are coming down from the heaven and turning over the city, and then Lot says, don't turn around, you're not supposed to, and she turns around, and all of a sudden she just like morphs into this pillar of salt, like they do in these sci-fi movies where somebody just changes in that way, Noah's wife in this movie makes a cheeky comment like, oh, it's ridiculous. People will rewrite history and claim we weren't even there. He's like, okay, you guys just rewrote whatever. Anyway, so the question is, what happened to Lot's wife? We're familiar with the story, but the story is that the city of Sodom is being destroyed, and these malachim, the Torah describes these malachim. In some cases, they're described as malachim. They're also described as anashim. The beginning of chapter 19, they're called Vayavo Shneha Malachim Sodoma. Okay, the two malachim. Now, malachim can either mean angels or it can mean messengers. They're elsewhere described as anashim. Remember, they had come to Avram's house, and Avram views them as anashim, men. And then they go from there to Sodom. So, regardless of how we view them, The point is that they get to Sodom and they inform Lot, Avram's nephew, of what's going to be happening, and we are informed in Pasuk Yibayz. If you have the Chumash open, you can look at Pasuk 12 on page 86 or 87, where the Pasuk tells us the men said to Lot. Right there is again Anashim, the Anashim. They say to Lot, "Who else do you have living here? Okay, son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, all you have in the city removed from this place. We're about to destroy this place because the outcry has become great before Hashem. Hashem has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law and the betrothed of his daughters. And he said, "Get up and leave the place, for Hashem is about to destroy the city." But he seemed like he looked like he was a jokester, a jester. So that's the background that we need for this story. Then Lot and his wife and his two daughters, they leave, as we see in verse 15 and 16. They go out and they're told at the very last two lines on the page, "Al tabit acharecha," right? Do not look behind you, nor stop anywhere in all the plain. Flee to the mountain, lest you be swept away. Okay, so what's the reason for this instruction? Don't look behind you. Okay, is there a prohibition against looking behind? Is there an isser? Is there something which God says you're not allowed to look, or is there a legitimate concern? In other words, maybe the whole reason why Lot is saved from Sodom is not really in Lot's merit, but it's more in Avram's merit. I mean, that's a pretty well accepted idea that Lot is really only saved because of Avram's merit. Okay, so al tabit acharecha means don't turn around because you don't have a right to see it. Okay. But what does it say? Do not look behind you, nor stop anywhere. Flee to the mountain, lest you be swept away. Lest you be swept away. What does that mean? Lest you be swept. So it doesn't say, don't turn around, because if you do, you're going to turn into salt. It says, don't turn around, lest you be swept away. So Lot, what?
Swept away by the evil?
Well, that's a good question, right? So that's something which we're going to be looking at, lest you be swept away. That's actually the conclusion, lest you be swept away, to, which I think is really the key to all of this and understanding what's taking place. If you turn the page, on the next page, Lot says to them, Alna Adonai, please know, my Lord, see now, your servant has found grace in your eyes, your kindness was great, which you did with me to save my life, but I cannot escape to the mountain because the evil attach itself, lest the evil attach itself to me and I die. What does that mean? What does that mean? Why can't I escape to the mountain? Paul, please, this city is near enough to escape there. It is small. I shall flee there. Is it not small? And I will live. And what is that place that he says? He says, Vehi Mitzar. Now, is that the name of the city? The art scroll translates it to say that it's small, but what we're about to see is that they're gonna actually give the name of this place in Pasuk 22, so this place that Lot wants to go to, which is Mitzar, I guess, is an adjective, that's how they're translating it, it's a small place, so it becomes Tsoar. Tsoar is a play on the word Mitzar. All right, and that's where the source which I gave you on the page that you have, is in front of you. So you can continue to follow in the Chumash, but I highlighted the things which I wanted you to see on the page. Hashemesh yitzal arts v'lot batzorah, the sun had risen by the time that Lot arrived in Tzoar. V'Hashemim tiral sedom v'almorah gafreis v'eish me'is Hashem reshmayim. Hashem rained down on Sodom and on Amorah gafreis v'eish, sulfur and fire rain, okay, which comes from the heavens, out of the sky. V'yafoch ha'seharim ha'el, and he turned over these cities, v'eis kalakikar, and the entire plain, and he overturned. There's an overturning. What does overturning mean? It means that if this is right, if this is Sodom, and here's all the trees, and here's all the flowers, and here's all the grass and the houses, where's everything from Sodom now? It's buried. And what's on here? Whatever was under the ground. So if it's a place that's fertile and it's dirt, so what do we see now here? Dirt. If it's a place that has salt underground, like the Dead Sea area, which is where Sodom is, then you're going to see salt. Okay, that's what you have. That's what a mahapecha means. Mahapecha means an overturning. Then the pasuk tells us, pasuk of 26, Vatabeit ishto me'acharav v'tihinitziv melach. Lot's wife looked behind him. Behind whom? I don't know. Here we're going to see an approach. Who did she look behind? But anyway, and she was turned into a pillar of salt. Now, is that a good translation? Vatehi. What is Vatehi? Anybody?
She became.
That would be like more like Vinases. She became. Vatehi means and she was. What does that mean? I don't know. I mean, I have an approach, but I don't know. Vatehi, Nitziv Melech, means and she was. Okay? And what does a pillar of salt mean? A nitziv? A pillar, a better translation of a pillar would be an amud. Nitziv means something that's standing, but and it's salt. But what does that mean? Did she morph? That's the question which we're going to be looking at. Okay, then the pasuk continues and tells us about Avraham and how Avraham got up in the morning, he saw what was going on, and then in the middle of pasuk Chavtas 29, we see that when Hashem had destroyed, or as Hashem was destroying the cities of the plain, by his kor limus Avraham, God remembered Avraham, by shalach es lot mitoch haficha, so he sent Lot out from the overturning of the cities, bafokas harim asher shabahin Lot, as the city where Lot lived was overturned. Okay, so we're getting an understanding, at least somewhat, that the destruction of Sodom contains and consists of, there are things raining down from the heavens, sulfur, fire, right? Gofris v'melach. There's an overturning of the land, and there's salt involved. Okay? So with that, I mean background, and that's the Chumash, right? That's the Torah. So now we're gonna. I'm gonna address a second question. A second. Now I want to address, as you see on the sheet, three major questions. Why salt? Did Lot's wife turn around out of curiosity or something else? Did she morph into a pillar of salt? And the approach which I'm going to share with you at the end might be proven by another pasuk towards the end of the Torah. Yeah, Terry.
If the whole city
just overturn, okay? What was the original point of the ram?
Of the gofris? What does it say? Gofris va'esh.
What's the point? I mean, if you turn everything down enough, everything's buried, everybody dies.
Right. I think it's more to create a precedent because of what I'm going to share with you in a little while. Okay, there are a couple of things which are important. I mean, we don't see, for example, after the flood, after the flood in Noah's time, we don't see a flood ever destroying the world again. After the destruction of Sodom, we don't see an overturning of a city in the same way. But we do see the concept of gofris va'esh.
Which is what?
The sulfur and the fire raining down.
But even okay. That doesn't take away from the question.
Correct.
It wasn't part of
correct.
It,
then correct.
That not repeating the
right.
Part that wasn't.
So what's the difference? What's the difference? That there's one which is a destruction, which levels the place, but says you can rebuild. The overturning says done.
Yeah.
Okay, it's over. Nothing's ever going to be rebuilt here. So I think that's it's a good question, but I don't know if that's a satisfactory answer to you, but I think that it's an approach to understanding how Sodom is a different animal than anything else which we're going to see in a different place. I mean, it's so much so, it's like nowadays, for example, Lahavdil, okay, when we, you know, it's one of the reasons why a lot of people are I think there's a little bit of a pushback of calling people who aren't really Nazis, Nazis, right? You know, like to say, for example, about the president that he's a Nazi is you know is idiotic. I mean, it's just you can disagree with him on policy, you can disagree with him in terms of governance and all that stuff, but to say he's a Nazi, that's insane, and that's the end of right. But it's wrong. It's the end of the conversation. Why? Because Nazism was just you know everybody with half a brain says Nazism is evil. Okay, and that is the epitome of evil. So when you start calling everything which is not really the epitome of evil, okay, you know, not making concentration camps and targeting innocent civilians for murder, that's Nazism. Okay, so anything else, you start saying Nazi, well, then there's no conversation to be had. So Sodom has, you know, is in like a category of itself. When we start talking about Sodom, oh, that is terrible. Oh, what's going on in America? You know, there's immorality and whatever. Is it Sodom yet? You know, so that's an important distinction. So when we talk about the overturning of Sodom, because that's Sodom. That's Sodom. Whatever else going on, you know, bad stuff, but it's not Sodom. What was told to Nineveh? Od arba'im yom v'Nineveh nehepeches. It's going to be turned over. So what do? They do tshuva. So was Nineveh overturned? Because Nineveh says, oh my God, we're not Sodom. We may be bad, but we're not Sodom. So you don't want to be in that category. Okay, so let's go back to the first question. Okay, why salt? So there is an approach that the Midrash has in explaining where this idea of salt came from, that why she would turn into salt. Okay, now again, I'm going to remind you of what I noted when we read the Psukim. The Pasuk says the Malach or the man, whatever, the Malach or the Anashim, the Malachim or the Anashim, they said to them, don't turn around, lest you be swept away. It doesn't say, don't turn around, lest you be turned into salt. Okay? So look what the Midrash says.
Die.
What?
Lest you die.
Right, okay, lest you die. Fine, die. Okay, but there's never anything in the Torah where we find that somebody who dies, that their body morphs into something. We see people dying all the time, and we can call things punishment. We could talk about the period of the flood where there is rain and people drown. You could talk about Nadav and Avihu where fire comes down and consumes their soul because it enters their body, right? But it doesn't say that they, you know, that they like poof into ashes. That you know, just that they die. We don't find this concept of morphing. Even the Korach people, they get swallowed by the ground. So we understand that concept, right? There's an earthquake, or however you want to describe the ground opening up and swallowing them, but nobody says that they morph into, you know, now they become, I mean, I don't know what, right? Their bodies are consumed by the earth. They were here, the ground opened, they're gone, and that's it. But this idea of a morphing is just not how the Torah operates, not how God operates. I mean, Egypt, right? What happens to Egypt? they drown in the sea, right? They don't, they don't become something which it says Yardubim Solos Kamo Evan. They sank like stones. Do they become stones? No, you drown. That's how you die. Okay, now so what does it say? I'm just going to read in the English on the left. This is the first one is Bereishis Rabbah 51. His wife looked behind him, Vatihi Nitziv Melach, and it was a pillar of salt, and she was a pillar of salt. But Yitzchak says because she sinned with salt. What do you mean she sinned with salt? So the Bereishis Rabbah explains 51:5. On the night the angels came to Lot, what was she doing? She went to her neighbors and said to them, "Give me salt, for we have guests." Her intent was for them to tell the people of the city to cause trouble, and so she turned into salt. Because she asked for salt, she turned into salt. Hmm. Okay, that's the Midrash's approach. That's probably the most famous kind of, or most popular approach to explaining what happened with Lot's wife. She sinned with salt, so she was punished with salt.
I understand what she did.
So there's an explanation. The next Midrash explains in a little more detail. Okay? In which the Midrash Seichel Tov also quotes Rabbi Yitzchak, who says this idea, which I did not translate, but in the fourth line, in the Hebrew, Vishamati Mirabosai, okay, the author of the Midrash says, I heard from my teachers, Ki Simon Hayula im Sodomis Krovoseh, Ki Sheshoelis Melach, that she had a sign, or she had a code, with her Sodomite relatives, that if she asks for salt, they know that her husband has a guest. Okay, she doesn't want to speak ill of her husband because she knows that in Sodom they don't like guests. But if she goes over to her to them, they say, "Do you guys have any salt? Salt? Ooh, okay, I got it. We're going to let the town council know, and we're all going to make a big ruckus because we know what salt means. It's code word. It's code word. Okay.
If that were the case, yeah. If that made sense." Mm-hmm. And it seems like Lot was doing this not for the absolute first time in Sodom. It seems that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he had previous guests and the wife put out
this code, yeah.
And almost immediately they came for the guest, don't you think he would have realized something was connected?
Well, I mean, not necessarily. The point is that she doesn't, Lot might say, hey, what happened to my guests? Well, we don't know how anybody knew. I mean, your wife came to our house. Your wife came to our house and she, she just asked for salt. My goodness, she didn't say anything about guests. So, Jerry, I'm with you, okay? I mean, I have a very difficult time accepting this narrative that says that she asked for salt and therefore she turns into salt.
So they took the guests and killed the guests?
They would, well, I mean, you see what happens in the story. We didn't go through that because that's not, we're looking at the actual destruction. But the Torah describes how when it was discovered that Lot had guests, the whole town came and said, give us your guests so that we can neda'o some, that we can know them. And biblical knowing, of course, that's the source of the concept of what's sodomy. Right? That they, so their reputation is that they weren't very nice to guests. Okay, we'll just leave it at that. But because she's talking about salt, so now she morphs into salt. Is that what this means? So now we have to go into the next question, which is, did she turn around out of curiosity? Now, when we looked at the psukim, we saw that she turns around. She was told, they were told, don't turn around. Again, what was the pasuk? Don't turn around, don't look behind you, nor stop anywhere in all the plain. Flee to the mountain, lest you be swept away. Okay, so there is a concern that if you turn around, I mean, what can happen when you turn around? Okay, now I have never been near a real natural disaster of any kind. Certainly not one that I could watch. I actually once saw a movie about when we used to go to when we had fewer kids, we used to go visit my in-laws there in Milwaukee, and my wife still goes, but it's just harder to go with everybody. So, but we would go to the museum, which has a big IMAX theater. Okay, so the Natural History Museum, whatever they call it. What's it called?
The Public Museum.
Whatever it is. Okay, Natural History Museum. So they have this big IMAX theater, and they would often show, when we were there, they'd always show something. Like there was one time we saw the one about Everest. One time we saw one about these twisters or tornado, right? The tornado chasers. These guys, they wanted to get filming from the eye of a tornado. Okay, so they made this kind of machine that could be you know, that if they chase it right, it can implant itself in the ground so that the tornado would not be able to move it, some kind of truck. And they wanted to just get video footage from the inside of a tornado. Okay, and they finally get it. So I can imagine that if you see a path of a tornado and you kind of feel like you're safe, then you might want to watch it, because that's cool, right? So what does that mean? Your tornado, you're running, you realize the tornado is going that way. Okay, I'm going to turn around, I'm going to watch, because that's fascinating, right? It's human nature to want to see a natural disaster. If I am off in a distance, nowhere near the problem, and I see a volcano erupt and the lava coming down, you know, it's painful to see and to imagine that it might be people down there who are like, there's nothing I could do for them, but I'm going to watch. I mean, that's fascinating. Okay, has any of you ever seen videos of the aftermath of a tsunami? Yeah. I mean, it's horrifying when you think about the human toll, but it is fascinating.
Well, when we had Hurricane Irma, I have impact windows, so I don't have shutters. I saw all those heavy winds. I mean,
right.
I got a chance to see all that. I mean, I didn't see the hardcore stuff, right?
Right.
I see
right from right. And there are people who go out to the beach. You see this every time there's a hurricane. They go out to the beach. They want to see what's happening with the... I mean, this past hurricane, the beach in some places, like the water disappeared. It was gone for days. You have pictures of people going out far off because however the natural course of the hurricane did. It's just fascinating because it's against what we think of as nature. So he's telling her, perhaps he's telling her, or telling them, don't turn around, because you'll be swept away. In other words, you're not out of the city yet by the time that you turn around. And if you stay there, you watch, guess what's going to happen? You might just get caught in the watching, and who knows?
Same thing we had when
who knows?
So the eclipse, remember all the people wanted right. to see the eclipse?
Right, right. And who knows? So look what it says. His wife looked behind him. This is the Midrash Haggadah 19:26. Midrash Haggadah says, his wife looked behind him. After the angel had told her not to, her soul was torn over her daughters who remained in Sodom. Okay, in other words, why would she be turning around? Because she's a nefarious, evil lady who wants to watch her neighbors be destroyed? No. She's hoping against hope. She's been pulled out of the city by these two guys, with her husband and her two single daughters, but she has other daughters and probably grandchildren, and she's waiting. Hey, are they coming? 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 I can't go back in. I see the destruction, right? But maybe there's a longing. Maybe they're going to be following. Okay? And then he says the party line, right? She turned into salt because she had sin with salt, etc. And then he actually gives us another little twist beyond the code. When her neighbors asked her why she needed salt at night, didn't you know in the middle of the day you were out of salt? And she says, no, we don't really need salt. We have guests. So, I mean, that's really, you know.
That's a code.
And that's how the Sodomites knew that the angels were in Lot's house. Okay? So, and the Bereishis Rabbati, again, a similar idea. I just find it fascinating. They actually identify her by name. They say, Rabbi Eliezer said, Edith, the wife of Lot, had pangs of mercy for her married daughter, she turned around to see if they were following her or not. And then she saw the Shekhinah, and she became, and here it says, V'naseis Netziv Melach. Okay, remember before I asked you what the word Vatihi means. Here the Midrash says, V'naseis, that she became a pillar of salt. Okay? Who did she look behind? That she looked behind the Malach. In other words, when they came to her, in the form of anashim, in the form of men in Sodom, so she could look upon them. But when they're doing their business in destroying the city, they're, you know, it's like sometimes you have in these movies where you have an angel who comes to you in the form of a man, but because he needs to relate to you. And if you see them as an angel, you'd be frightened. But when they're doing their business, they form back into an angelic kind of creature. You see this a little bit like in Harry Potter movies where there's like a, you know, witchcraft, etc. Not that I want to call angels witchcraft, but the idea that looking at them as a man is not a big deal, but looking at them as a malach is a big deal. So when she looks behind him, she sees an angelic creature. She's not of a level that she can see or relate to that, And so that, right, and we have another example of that, for example, in the story of Shimshon. Remember the birth of Shimshon? The birth of Shimshon, prior to the birth of Shimshon, the shofet, the judge, so his parents, they have a vision. Some guy comes over to them and he tells them, you're going to have a child and he's going to be Nazir Elohim, he's going to be a Nazirite, you're never allowed to cut his hair, you can't feed him any wine. And so they're like, who is this guy? They think he's a prophet. Okay, a prophet's a human being, no problem. And then they make this offering, and you know what he does? He jumps onto the Mizbeach and he disappears. And the Pasuk says that at that point they realize that he was an angel, and they say, oh my God, we're going to die because we saw an angel. You can't see an angel and live. And Eshes Manoach, I don't remember which one says it. I don't remember which one says it. She's the one who says that if God wanted us to die, he wouldn't have, the smarter one, he wouldn't have had us see all of this. Okay? So that's the reality. Okay? So, but here he's saying that the Midrash is suggesting that because she saw behind the angel, again, whatever that means, then that's the reason why she died. And in her particular case, on account of her issues with salt, she becomes salt. Okay, this midrash says Naaseis Nitziv Melech, that she became. Is that the case? That's not what the pasuk said. The pasuk says Vatehi, that she was. Take a look at the next source. Okay, in our question under the title of Did She Morph? Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer 25. He said to them, "Do not look behind you. Al tabitu l'acharechem sharei yordesh inasa shal kadosh baruch l'am tiyas dom." Because the Shekhinah, the presence of God, had come down to rain upon Sodom, the fire and the sulfur. So now here you see that they called her Irit. So what's her name? Idit or Irit? I don't know. So obviously a Dalet and a Resh are similar enough that either it's just a difference of opinion or one of them is a typo, in which case we still don't know. But all right, we'll leave it for what it is. Irit, the wife of Lot, Nichmu Rachma al Benosah Nesuos, so she had pangs of mercy for married daughter. She turned around to see if they were following her. She looked behind her to see if they're coming. And she saw Acharei Ashchina. That's a little bit different than we saw before. In the previous source, in the Bereshis Rabati, number 80, page 82, we saw that they said that they were looking, that she looked behind the angel. Here she says she saw behind the Shechina. So it uses that same language, that she became a pillar of salt. Okay, so what else do we see? In the other two sources that I gave you here, the Sechel Tov, which is actually probably it's the same source as before, and the Yalkut Shimoni. So the Yalkut Shimoni goes a little bit further than we saw in this idea that Rabbi Yitzchak, so we're going to skip the Sechel Tov. Look at Yalkut Shimoni 247, 85, where he says that she said, the night the angels came to Lot, what was she doing? She went to all of her neighbors asking for salt because we have guests. Her intent was to let the men of the city know about it, and so she became a pillar of salt. When God destroyed the cities, he remembered Avram. Our rabbis taught, one who sees Lot's wife makes two blessings, Dayan Ha'emet and Zocher HaTzadikim, right, the judgment for her and the remembering of the righteous, either for Lot or perhaps for Avraham, that's what happened. But the problem with all of this, I think, is that there is not enough of an indicator to support this idea that Vatehi Nitziv Melech means Naaseis Nitziv Melech. And this is something which I would certainly double down on and support with a basic understanding of the way the Chumash works. Over the few classes that I've, the different classes that I've been giving over the last few years in the Parsha, focused on the work of some of the different commentaries. In each of the Parsha class, I just use one commentary. And what these Mefarshim do is they look at a word and they say, what does the word mean? Why is this word used? Why is a different word not used? What can you take from this word and what is implied versus what is not implied? And the whole idea of what happens to Lot's wife is supplanted on the idea that the word Vatehi means and she became. But you see from the Midrash that in these two cases that we just saw, from the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, from the Bereishis Rabbati, we see that the phrase that the Midrash uses is Naaseis, that she became. Naaseis means Naaseis from the Oseh, as opposed to Vatehi, which means that she was. So that is an interpretation. That is not necessarily a reflection of her particular reality. And how can I say such a thing? I can say such a thing, and I said at the outset, I'm going to bring you two sources. So one of them is actually from this week's Parsha. In this week's Parsha, we have the depiction of the plagues. And in the class that I, in my Parsha class this week, which is using the Or HaChaim, one of the points that he makes, it's his opening comment in chapter 8, where he explains how the plagues in Egypt, after each plague in Egypt, where Paro thought that there was a danger to life, Paro actually agreed to let the people go. He changed his mind afterwards, or sometimes he agrees with an exception. For example, say you can go, but you can't take your children. You can go, but leave your animals, etc. Those are different things which Paro does. But in each case, Paro thought that there was a danger to life. So the times that he does it is after the plague of frogs. Why the plague of frogs? Because the pasuk says that the frogs are going into their bodies. Okay, and he thought that a frog which gets lodged in the throat, or despite the joke, you have a frog in your throat, right? But that it literally gets stuck in your throat, or gets stuck in your stomach, or in your intestines, you can die. That's a concern. So that's one. Another one is the arov, the animals that could bite you, whether it's animals that could bite you or a snake bite. That's something from which a person could die. Whether these things were intending to actually kill Egyptians or not, the point is that there is a fear of death, and that is when Paro allows them to leave. The same thing goes, the next one is the, where he lets them go, is the plague of Barad, the plague of hail. And that's the one that I want to focus on. The other one that he does is also the plague of locusts, which the Torah actually describes, where he says, V'yaser me'alai rakas amaves azeh, that you should remove from me this death which comes from a locust. Okay, so I'm not going to get into that, but I want to share with you what the Or HaChaim says about the hail. Okay? He says, why was Paro concerned about death? Because that what happened was God, Hirim Hashem Mishamayim. You know what Hirim means? That's like thunder, right? He thunders down from the heavens, V'nasan kolos v'esh. There's thunder, there's fire, Min Hashemayim, there's fire coming down from the heavens. So what happened was, Nafla alehem masavacha, they had a fear. She'yaseh lahem k'mapecha Sodom v'Amorah. That Egypt said, oh my goodness, fire coming down, you know what's next. When fire comes down, that's a sign that what's about to happen is the city or the country is going to be overturned. So they're afraid they're going to die. Now the plague was Barad. We know what that means. Barad means hail. The plague was not a turning over. But from Paro's perspective, we know the script. Right? Fire comes down, the next thing that's coming is overturning and we're all going to die. Which means that what kills you? Not the fire, but the overturning. Okay? So now, that's the first point that I want to draw to your attention. And the last one is the last source on your page. Devarim Chavtes. Okay? This is in Parshas Nitzavim. Parshas Nitzavim has in it what I'll just call a mini tochacha. A tochacha is a big rebuke. A big rebuke in Parshas Kisavo, and of course another one in Parshas Bechuk Osai at the end of the book of Vayikra. But this, you have a mini rebuke, you have a couple of mini rebukes towards the end of the book of Devarim, after the big one at the end of Parshas Kisavo, or the middle of Parshas Kisavo. And this is what Moshe warns the people, okay, when he says, Atem nitzavim hayom lefnei Hashem Elokechem, you guys are all standing, nitzavim hayom, isn't that funny? Nitziv melech, you're all standing before God. And everything is before you, and God is la'ovrecha bevris Hashem alokecha v'lasom. God's going to pass you through this covenant, etc. And what does he say? One of the warnings is, gofris v'melach sreifa kol arza, sulfur and salt has burned all over the soil. Lo sizara v'lo satzmiach, nothing can be planted, nothing can grow. V'lo ya'ale b'kol esed, not even grass can grow on it. K'mapecha Sodom v'amorah ad mo tzvoyim. Those are the names of the different cities of Sodom. Okay. Sodom, Amorah, Mo, Tzvoyim, and the last one was probably Tzoar. Okay, Asher Apach Hashem Apo V'Chmaso. That it's like the overturning of Sodom, Amorah, Admo, and Tzvoyim. The cities of God overturned in His anger and His rage. Okay, now, have any of you ever seen I'm trying to remember. I think it was the movie Deep Impact. Probably the movie Deep Impact. Okay, there were a few movies that came out in the late 90s. One was called Deep Impact, another one was called Armageddon, which tried to demonstrate what would happen if a large meteor hit Earth, what would happen. And in fact, one, I don't remember which one of those movies was, I remember just seeing them both, but in one of those movies, a smaller meteor hits a city, and you know what happens as a result? It comes in at a tremendous speed, hits the city, and what happens as a result of the impact is a city is leveled. I mean, just wiped away. Think about what happened, Lahavdil, you know, we unfortunately were able to see this when 9/11 happened, is when the towers collapsed, whatever destruction came in the immediate area, because some of the other buildings also fell down, in addition to the Twin Towers, was just that, because of that impact, what it does, and shakes foundations, etc.
Same thing with when the United States dropped the atomic bomb.
Right, exactly.
And at the end of World War II.
Correct, atomic bomb, right. So where does the bomb go? One spot. But how far of an impact it has?
Tremendous.
Right, tremendous, tremendous. So when you have a city, so, you know, it's one thing to say that, all right, here's a city, and boom, it gets overturned. So if you say, all right, so whatever was here is now overturned, end of story. No, there's an impact, and it goes beyond just where the city is. And so when Lot's wife turns around, okay, there's Gafrizva melach serefa kol artza, what? Sulfur and salt has burned all the soil. It's like the overturning of Sodom and Amorah. What happens when Sodom and Amorah is overturned? The Gofris Vamelach doesn't even say Eish, doesn't even say fire. The sulfur and the salt does essentially what the atom bomb does, or what this meteor does. It just consumes everything. So Lot's wife is turning around. Now, we can say she sees God, but what happens when you see God? What happens when you see God? The pasuk says, "Lo yirani ha'adam v'chai." You can't see God and live. Okay. One of the interpretations about what happened to Nadav and Avihu is that because they see our God at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, and you can look it up, chapter 24, they saw God. They were slated to die, but their death was not put on them at that point in time. It was saved for a little later. Okay. You see God, you die. When? Okay, it could be delayed, but you see God, you can't live. She sees God. Says she can't live. Now, could be that she died right away. We don't know. What the Torah does say is that Vatihi Nitziv Melach. Now, Vatihi Nitziv Melach means that she's a pillar of salt, which we assume means that she's dead, although it's fascinating that Lot doesn't even seem to miss her for half a second, which is just bizarre. But anyway, but what I'm suggesting to you is that after the city is overturned and the salt and the sulfur overtake everything, it just keeps going until she is consumed by it. What does it mean she's consumed by it? It means that just like lava might consume somebody, does the person turn into lava? Well, the person gets burned by it, but the person, you know, and dies, but the person doesn't become lava.
Coated,
right? So that's what happened to her. Now, when you're covered by salt, which is coming because it's just overtaking you, what's going to happen to you? Well, you can't move. You can't breathe. It's not going to take very long before you die. And that's what I think happened to her, based on the evidence from the pasuk and based on the evidence of what the overturning of the city is meant to be. And so I think that it's a different perspective, even though the Midrash does talk about this idea that, you know, she spoke about salt, but that's not what mida keneged mida is. Mida keneged mida means measure for measure, right? She spoke lashon hara. Let's say she spoke lashon hara. Let's say she said, "We have salt in our house." Wink, wink. Salt equals guests. Or, "We have guests in our house and I'm asking for salt." That's not the way God operates. You don't become salt because you spoke about salt, and that's not even a reason to die. All the Midrashim are saying, yeah, I mean, she was punished with salt, but they're not saying she died because of what she said regarding the guests. She died because she saw the Shekhinah. She died because she saw God, or the Malach. She died because she was overtaken by what happened with the city. So the point that I wanted to bring out is that the Midrash does contribute a lot. But to take the idea, and this is another point that I also emphasized from the beginning of this class, you know, in other words, for this series, is that Midrash helps us, but it's not always meant to be taken literally, especially when the Midrash is suggesting something which goes out of the realm of the way that God runs the world. Then we need to have a healthy dose, I don't want to call it skepticism, but a healthy dose of skepticism in how we understand this. I can understand she sinned with salt, she's punished with salt. Okay? You talked about salt and you almost got your guests and your husband in trouble. Who knows that the city of Sodom was supposed to be destroyed that quickly? Maybe the Malachim would have waited until the morning, but because the people of Sodom came right away on account of what she may have done, so things were sped up a little bit. And so you sinned with salt. Well, salt is going to be your demise, and you will be overcome with salt. You asked for salt. Oh, you're going to get salt, but you're dying for other reasons, not because of what took place at that time. And you're dying because you're being consumed by the destruction. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean she was a terrible lady. She didn't listen to the instructions. And the reason why she turned around could very well be because she was concerned about her children, her grandchildren, which is, honestly, I mean, that's normal. I don't want to say it's honorable or admirable, because anybody might do that. But she disobeyed the instruction from God. Her children had a chance to come and follow, and they chose not to, which is sad and tragic and unfortunate. And honestly, maybe she was saying, you know what, if they're going to die, I want to be there. Maybe she ran back. I don't know. Because there is a human element to the story. But just to take it at that base level, that she became salt, is something which the premise for this class is that that's not the way God operates the world. And therefore, I wanted to show you a different perspective based in the Midrash, but also based in Psukim, which show that there is destruction and there's death and there's punishment, or just consumption. I don't mean consumption. I mean being consumed by the destruction, as opposed to God totally reversing any kind of nature and says, oh, here's a human being, and the way this human being is going to die is by being morphed into salt. I don't think that that's supported by the Pasuk. I don't think it's supported by the Midrash, especially when we say that the Midrash is trying to teach us a lesson about salt and speech and behavior, but it's not trying to say, oh, she talked about salt, and therefore she turned into salt. That's not the way God runs the world. Yeah.
So, I'm just kind of confused. Obviously, in the end, the last one, it does say sulfur and salt, but before that it said God rained fire and sulfur. It never said salt. Where is this salt?
No, the Pasuk tells us that there's salt there.
Where?
No, in other words, we know from the end when the Torah describes the overturning of Sodom, what that means, that it includes gofris v'melach, sulfur and salt. Go to Sodom now, right? Go to the Dead Sea area.
Okay.
There's a reason why they have sulfur baths, right? Okay, it's natural supply there. It's salt, also natural supply there. We know from this pasuk here at the end of the Torah what are the natural resources there.
Okay,
the fire, that comes from heaven. That's beyond our talk. But what you have in Sodom, in that area, in that region, is sulfur and salt. And the reason why, I mean, it doesn't mention it specifically, because but it does mention it in the context of the overturning of the city. And that's the point that I'm trying to make. That salt is there, it's present, it overtakes her, and that is what consumes her, but it does not, she doesn't morph into that. Okay? Okay. All right. Thank you, folks. See you next week.